The following is a session of questions and answers conducted by His Holiness Vana Maharaj, recorded on October 30th, 1989, in Bombay, India.
I would like to come in 6 to 7 weeks.
December.
That is my plan. Man proposes, God disposes. Prabhupada used to say that this human society is very attached to its plan-making business. It is not by our own endeavors that we can be successful in life. God reciprocates according to our desire. But ultimately, for a devotee, he knows that God knows what is best. Huh? It is said when Krishna is merciful, he gives you what you want. But when he's most merciful, he gives you what you need. And oftentimes, what you need is not what you want. But that is the problem. Sometimes we think what we want is what we need, and we become too much attached. But real detachment in the school of bhakti is not simply to give away all your possessions and to live sleeping under a tree, wearing a loincloth, and eating only what you beg from the door of the householders. That is an external form of detachment. But the essence of detachment is to not be attached to anything but what Krishna wants. To only be attached to the desire of the spiritual master and the desire of the Lord, and to have no other attachments outside of that. That is the essence, the perfection of vairagya or detachment. And what this means in practical terms is that just as Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, he presented his idea to Krishna. But when Krishna rejected his idea completely, Arjuna accepted, Krishna, whatever you want. Huh? So we have our plans. But when we become Krishna's devotees, we should know Daivim Prakriti Mashvata. We are no longer simply under the laws of karma, but we are under the divine will of God. Krishna is personally designing our life just the way we need to be situated for our spiritual advancement. Krishna is not concerned with our material advancement, because material advancement is temporary. Krishna does not love your body. Krishna loves your soul. Huh? because he knows that the body under his divine, under his material nature is soon to grow old, get diseased and die. Therefore, Krishna's love for you is that he longs to see your soul liberated from the bondage of birth and death. Krishna longs to see your soul free in the spiritual world, where we can once again unite with him and enjoy eternally. Huh? In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita by Srila Sanatana Goswami, he tells the story of a servant of the Lord who, due to his desire to enjoy separate from the Lord, inconceivably fell from his position in Goloka Vrindavan and entered into the material world. And the infinite greatness of God is that Abba is the supreme enjoyer, and he is infinitely enjoying the love of Sri Radha and his eternal associates. Still, within the heart of every living being, the Lord of Vrindavan is conscious of every single one of his children, wherever they are. And those children of his who are bound by the laws of karma in this material world, Krishna is constantly waiting, longing for that child to return home. And it is described by Sanatana Goswami, the story of one such soul, how he returned to the path of bhakti, to his eternal constitutional position in Goloka Vrindavan. He appeared in the spiritual world in his original body as a cowherd boy. And when he entered into the pasture grounds of Braja, all the gopas, all the cowherd boys, were so glad to see him again. They were all overjoyed welcoming him home. It was a grand festival. And when Lord Sri Krishna saw his lost servant, with tears in his eyes, he ran to his devotee and he embraced him. And as they embraced, both Krishna and his lost servant who had returned, tears were flowing like rivers from both of their eyes. Both of their bodies were trembling in ecstasy. They were both speechless, choked up with love for one another. This is pure love. This is not the love of this world. This is the infinite love of God. And then Lord Sri Krishna, the king of Braja, he began to speak to his friend that for such a long time, I have been patiently waiting for you to return. You have left me and have gone into the material world, and piteously I have watched you suffer through millions and millions and millions of births and deaths. Now you've seen, after suffering for countless lifetimes, come to the human form of life, and finally come to that conclusion that this material world is a place of suffering. that I am the eternal servant of Krishna. But being bound by lust and envy and anger and pride and illusion and greed, I have left my Lord. And that love that is dormant in my heart, I cannot find it anywhere. And then I went and surrendered to Guru. And after surrendering to Guru, you had to go against the whole flow, the mighty waves that are constantly pushing you downward to the ocean of birth and death. You have to choose in a world of atheism, in a world of hypocrisy, in a world that is utterly addicted to nothing but sense gratification. You have to choose to give up all those things for me and me alone. In my heart, I was watching and waiting. And I have seen you. How you were forced to give up those things that you loved most in the world for my sake. And I watched how much pain and suffering you had to undergo by doing that for me. And I saw how persons, they laughed at you, they persecuted you. How your own friends turned against you and ridiculed you and hated you and harmed you. Only because of your loyalty to the service of my lotus feet. And how much you had to endure, how much pain, how much sorrow, how much broken heart. But you did it for me. And I watched how through your life you remain true and faithful and loyal to my loving service. And thus, your heart became pure. Your love for me again awakened. And how upon leaving your body, you are crying out my holy name, relinquishing all other shelters of this world. And with tears in his eyes, Krishna said, so much you have endured for me. There is no one more dear to me than you. Welcome home to your eternal home, to Vrindavan. I will never forget what you have done for my sake. Together, we will never be separated again for the rest of eternity. You are my child. You are my love. Krishna is a person. When we return back home, back to Godhead, it is not like checking in the office after sick leave. When we return to the spiritual world, we are greeted by Krishna with the sweetness of his infinite love. In fact, through the mercy of the spiritual master, through the mercy of the scripture, through the mercy of the great sadhus, Krishna is searching for each and every one of us to find us and bring us back home, back to Godhead. So we may have so many plans and so many ideas and so many desires. But a devotee understands from the core of his heart that Lord Sri Krishna, he only has one desire, that we never have to suffer again, that we return to his eternal home. And when we surrender to Krishna and we ask Krishna honestly and sincerely from the core of our heart, "My dear Lord, I am yours. I am your property and I am your servant." Maradira kobi jai chataha Nityata sa prati thua adhika. Krishna says, Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays, "My dear Lord, if you want, you can kill me. Or if you want, you can protect me. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prayed, "My dear Lord, if you want, you can embrace me. Or if you desire, you can trample upon me. Or if you want, you cannot be brokenhearted by not being present before me. You have any way to, you have all right to deal with me in any way you please, because I am your servant. You are not my servant, Krishna. I am your servant. I am tired of asking you, Krishna, how you can serve me. Birth after birth after birth, we are begging Krishna, 'Give me this, give me that. How can you serve me?' I never want to ask that question again. I am your servant. How can I serve you, my Lord? I have faith, I have trust in your love. Therefore, I am willing to accept whatever position you put me in. Whether you put me in a situation of prosperity, opulence, and a long life with good health, or whether you give me disease, infamy, whether you break my heart again and again and again, whether you deprive me or take everything away, my Lord, I am willing to accept whatever you do as your infinite mercy and as your love." Therefore, the devotee accepts whatever comes into his life as the mercy of God. A devotee accepts whatever comes into his life or her life as exactly, specifically, the personally tailored arrangement by God to help you advance in devotional consciousness. Huh? And that is a fact. There is no doubt. We must have this faith. Tathamukampam susamukshyamano brunjana evatmakritam vipagam ridvagvapurvir viditam namaste jivetiya muktipade sadayabak. Whatever comes, a devotee is thankful. A devotee is gracious. A devotee is grateful.
He knows that friends, enemies, all these things are not what they appear to be.
It is all the arrangement of Krishna. To purify us from our false ego,
the mercy of God, as it comes by His sweet will, then we are the suitable candidate for the supreme liberation of going back home, back to Godhead.
Does that answer your question? His question was, when I'm coming back to India. See, sometimes we learn, after preaching to many, many people, how to take an unphilosophical question and give a philosophical reply. Yes.
Krishna is trying his level best to take us home for liberalization from this material world. He tries his level best to give us difficulties. He tries to see that we come out of it. He gives us suffering and everything. But it's our habit that we don't recognize it, that it's a difficulty, and he's trying to take us out from this world. We try to face it by our ego, and we see that we can come out of it by our own way. We don't remember him at that moment of time. And that's why we are not able to understand that this is the mercy of Krishna by which we are going through, which he is putting us this difficulty upon us. Now, in that circumstances, we are still, although the difficulties are, although Krishna is trying, trying his level best to come out from us, yet we are not able to understand it. Now, how to think that on a positive note itself, that whatever the difficulties or whatever that is coming, that is only through Krishna's will, and it is for our own purification and for our own. This idea doesn't come always. Once or twice it comes, okay, whatever is of Krishna's will. But sometimes when all the difficulty comes in time, we feel it, oh, we'll have to face it. We don't remember Krishna at that time.
Sometimes, do you have like this? You are speaking on behalf of everyone.
It's for my
this faith is a gift that can only be obtained by the mercy of the great saints. We simply have to be willing to receive the mercy of the great saints, the sadhus.
Shushushroshadhanasya vasudevakataruchi syan mahatsevaya viprapundyatirutanasevana.
It is said, by serving the great devotees of the Lord, great service is done. By such service, the Lord in the heart is pleased, and He awakens within us the faith and the intelligence by which we can come to Him. When we receive the blessings of Krishna's surrendered devotees, Krishna within the heart reciprocates with those blessings by awarding one Krishna consciousness, by awarding one faith. It is said in one of Srila Prabhupada's purports from Bhagavad Gita that faith is awakened within our heart through the process of associating with saintly persons, by hearing from them, and by rendering service to them. When Krishna sees our desire to honestly, not as a show, it is not that you keep a guru like a picture on the wall, but you must keep the guru within your heart. Huh? We must keep the association of the saintly persons within our heart. When Krishna sees our honest and sincere desire to hear his message from his devotees, through their lips Krishna will speak and invoke that faith by which we will be able to gradually perceive everything within his divine plan. Huh? That is the process. We must have sincere desire. We must follow in the footsteps of the great souls. We must pray for that vision. We must hear from those who have that vision, and we must become their servant. That vision is not a cheap thing. That vision alone, that faith alone, is the ticket back to the spiritual world. Huh? Just like tomorrow I am flying to Delhi, and then in a couple of days I am flying to America. Now that ticket is somewhat costly. By God's grace, some devotees in Bombay are paying. But it is a costly ticket. Someone has to pay the price. Huh? Of course, I have to pay the price of coming here and becoming the servant of the servants. Otherwise, who would pay for a ticket? You have to pay the price for anything valuable. So you have to pay the price for the ticket back to Godhead. And the only price is your faith. Huh? Your sincere, honest faith. And that faith is a gift of God, which he gives through the mercy of his devotees. We simply have to be willing to receive it. Huh? And then, naturally, you will be endowed with that vision.
What is the form of the soul?
What is the form of the soul? One question at a time. The Siddha Swarup, the eternal natural form of the soul, is that it has a spiritual body. Depending on your constitutional position in the spiritual world, you may have the body of a cow, you may have the body of a kalpa vriksha tree, you may have the body of one of Krishna's servants,
You may have the body of a cowherd boy. You may have the body of one of the elderly gopi mothers of Krishna. You may have the body of a gopi. Also, in Vaikuntha, you may have a form that resembles exactly Narayan himself, save and except the golden thread, which is Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, that is on his chest alone. So that is our natural form. But when we misuse our independence and enter into the atmosphere of this material existence, what takes place is that Siddha Swarup, or Siddha Deha, that perfect body, that eternal body, which is Satchit Ananda Vigraha, that body is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. It is not composed of any material elements. It is pure spiritual energy. In the spiritual world, the soul is not different than the body. In the material world, the soul is different than the body. So when you enter into the material world, that soul, body, becomes dormant. It is no longer manifested. And the soul takes on a form 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair. But that infinitesimal, tiny little spiritual particle is the very source of all consciousness within your life. It is that tiny little infinitesimal particle, 1/10,000th the size of a tip of hair, that is your existence. That is what is seeing and hearing and tasting and feeling and thinking and loving. But as you become purified, the soul is gradually liberated from the clutches of the misidentification that I am this material body, which is temporary, full of ignorance, and always subject to pain. And when Krishna says in Gita, janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tattvata tyakto deham punara janma naiti mam eti sorajuna, one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities never takes birth again in this material world but attains my eternal abode. When you awaken your love for Krishna through the process of bhakti, then when you leave this particular body, which is inevitable, then the eternal soul again manifests its eternal spiritual body in the spiritual world. And there you enjoy with Krishna eternally. It's a perverted reflection. The gopis are women, so you are a woman. No offense, but your body is a perverted reflection of the women of the spiritual world. My body is a perverted reflection of the bodies of the gopas, the cowherd boys, the cowherd men of the spiritual world. The trees in this world are a perverted reflection of the kalpavriksha trees of Goloka. The same forms are here. But it is said in Gita, Natha Basyate Suryo Yashashankona Bhavata, that the forms in Vaikuntha, they are full of knowledge, they are full of light.
They are not only indestructible, but they are self-effulgent. But the perverted reflections of those forms in this material world are temporary, and because they are full of ignorance, they have no effulgence. There's no need for sun or moon or electricity in the spiritual world. Everything gives off its own light. In the spiritual world, your body is so effulgent that if all the lights were to go out and all the electricity, what would we see? We would be in complete chaos. We wouldn't even know how to get out of this building. We would be all bumping into each other and crashing, and we would be in complete anxiety. Where's the lights? Where's the candles? Huh? But if you were to come in this room in your original spiritual body, in all the darkness, you would light up everything. Everyone would be thinking, ah, Anju has come, how nice. Huh? But unfortunately now, your body, my body, it's a perverted reflection. It gives no light, it's just part of the darkness. So the form is of the same nature in resemblance. But it is a completely different nature and quality. Yes.
How can we test ourselves that we are very sincere in our spiritual life? We might be attending all the lectures, we might be attending the temple, we might be associated with the devotees also. We might be like a ritual also. But how can we test ourselves that we are sincere in spiritual life?
The test is when you're asked to do something you don't like and you do it anyway. Isn't that how Krishna tested Arjuna? It's the part of the process to be tested. Without tests, we really never know if we're making spiritual advancement. Huh? The test is whether we are willing to put the will of Krishna and the will of Guru before our own. That is really the test. And also the test is to the degree we are giving up sinful life and sense gratification. Recently I was in America and someone asked me, a devotee, it doesn't seem like I've made any spiritual advancement in so many years as a devotee. He said, I still have material desires. I still have so many attachments. Why have I made no advancement? So we asked him, what were your values before you were a devotee, and what are your values now? And he thought back, and they're completely different. My values before was, I like to go to the movies, I like to get intoxicated, I like to have girlfriends. This is what he was telling me. I like to eat meat. Huh? I like to just do what I want, when I want, and I wanted to become very rich and very famous. I said, now what do you want? He said, now I still have the desires for those things, but I don't want those desires. I want to give them up. I haven't given up the desire for the things, but I've given up the desire to have those desires. And therefore I don't do those things anymore. And I really want to love Krishna, but I can't. So isn't that spiritual advancement? Your whole value, the whole nature of all your values in life have completely changed. Huh? So that is another way to understand, by taking an inventory within our heart and investigating, what is my values in life? What are my real desires? What am I striving for? Huh?
But the advancement of spiritual advancement doesn't go in the same pace. Before 2 months it might be very high, sometimes it might come slum, then go down. Again it goes up. How to see to it is in the same level, in the same pace?
It will never be. It will never be on the same level from your sensual or mental perception until you become a pure soul, until your mind and senses are purified. Vyavashayatmaka buddhir ekeha kuru nandana bahusha kahyanantashta buddhayo vyavashayana. Krishna says in Gita, those who are on this path are resolute in purpose and their aim is one. The intelligence of those who are not on this path is many-branched. So as long as we are steady in accepting the instructions of the great souls, Mahatsevam Dwaram Ahurava Muktes, as long as we are steadily following their instructions and we are steadily engaged in their service and we are cultivating within our heart the desire for Krishna consciousness, then you know as a fact you are making advancement. Just like sometimes we chant Hare Krishna and we feel very great bliss, and sometimes we chant Hare Krishna and we feel pain. It's the absolute last thing in the world we want to do. I just want to get these rounds done with so I can do something else, anything, but not this. 16 rounds, 2 hours, my God, somehow or other I have to get through it. One day you're like that, correct? And the next day you're thinking, why don't I just become a Babaji and chant 150 rounds a day? It's so sweet, so nice. So delicious, huh? And on the next day, you just want to sleep. And during the rounds, you're just thinking, when can I go to sleep? It's not that I have 10 rounds to go. It's that I have so many thousands of syllables I have to somehow or other get through. Huh? And then the next day, you're ready to accept sannyas. Right? And the next day, you're thinking, in the old days it was so nice you could have more than one wife. Now only one, why? And the next day, you're thinking of becoming guru. So how do you know if I'm making spiritual advancement? You know when, no matter what you feel, whatever you think, that you are as hard as you can, with all the sincerity within your capacity, you're chanting the holy names. You chant your 16 rounds whether you hate it or love it. Whether you're totally engrossed in the attacks of Maya or whether you're totally absorbed in Krishna's Leela. One day the knobs of material nature influence us in different ways at every moment. As long as we are not on the purified platform, the transcendental platform. So you know you're making spiritual advancement when you continue according to the vows that you have taken with all sincerity to perform your chanting. You cannot know by the nature of your mind and senses, but you can understand by your determination to remain steady in the service of your Guru and Krishna. Do you understand?
Sometimes, Maharaj, we go on chanting the rounds, every 16 rounds we do it every day, but the material attachment goes on increasing.
Sometimes that happens.
So at that time we feel that whether we are going away from the spiritual life or whether you are there.
You are going toward Krishna. As long as you are sincerely trying to chant according to the instruction of the sadhus and the guru, you are making spiritual advancement, no matter what you feel. The holy name is like fire, and your consciousness is like butter, full of impurities. Now when you put the butter on fire, what happens to the impurities? They come to the surface. As long as they are mixed, you cannot even distinguish what is an impurity and what is the pure ghee. You can't distinguish. It's all mixed. But the fire separates the impurities from the purity of your consciousness. And the impurities come to the top where you can see them. Did you ever try to make ghee? And when you see the impurities come to the top, the butter looks filthy dirty, much worse than it ever was before. All these horrible, bubbly, brown substances start coming to the top and you have to keep just scraping them off. That's part of the purification. Before water becomes pure, first it looks dirtier than it was ever. So similarly, we have so many sinful desires in our heart. And when we start to chant Hare Krishna, all those sinful desires that are totally immersed within our consciousness, on the subtle stratum, they start coming to the surface. And we see it for the first time, what's there. And it's horrible. You see, when you chant, it's not that more material desires are coming into your heart. There's already, you have millions and billions and trillions of material desires within your heart. You are only conscious of one tiny little speck of what's there. If you could see everything within your consciousness, you would vomit. You might even die. You would be so shocked. You were thinking, this is me? But that's the way every single one of us are. This is me? But that's the way every single one of us are. But we only experience a tiny little particle of all the material desires that are within us at a time. But when you chant Hare Krishna, all these desires start coming out. And when they start coming out, you start to see them. And it's like, God, it's worse than ever. But if you keep chanting, they just keep coming out. And finally, when they're all gone, then you are pure. Then you can enjoy real peace, real bliss. And most of all, Krishna can enjoy you. So don't worry about what takes place during purification. What you have to worry about is that you, under all circumstances, never leave the fire so that the purification continues. Yes.
First question. The measurement is that you do things which you don't personally like to do, which is asked you to do, and you do it. Sometimes it's not a pleasure at all, it's a pain to do it. That's measurement of the progress, the spiritual progress. Now the question is, after sometimes it is done, pride develops. I was able to do this. You said such a difficult task.
I was able to do it.
Isn't that dangerous? So, how does one avoid that?
That is very dangerous. pride cometh before the fall. We have to be very sincere. False pride, even spiritual pride, is our worst enemy. As soon as you take credit for anything you do in the service of Guru, you don't really get the credit. Krishna is the ability in man. It is by the mercy of Guru that we can do anything for Krishna. Krishna does not need our material accomplishments. He wants our humble service. If you successfully execute the order of your guru on a physical plane, but you become proud of it, you failed. Huh? If you try your level best to execute the order of your guru and you fail, you've actually succeeded. If you've done it in the attitude of humble service. Huh? Krishna does not see the material result. Krishna sees the bhakti. He sees the humility of your service. And it is through the humility of your service that you make spiritual advancement, not by results on the physical level. Of course, a humble servant, when he's asked to get results, he'll give his life, he'll sacrifice everything to get that result. But it's that spirit of humble sacrifice that is what that Krishna enjoys. He doesn't enjoy money. He doesn't enjoy land. He doesn't enjoy philosophical dissertations. He doesn't enjoy simply a musical performance. He enjoys humility and devotion in the form of your service. That's all. So yes, when Krishna blesses us so that we are tested, asked to do something very difficult, and we do it, and we succeed, we should feel not proud, but grateful. We must cultivate this consciousness. We should feel supremely grateful for the mercy of Guru that he has allowed me to perform this tapasya for my purification. We shouldn't feel proud that to see I have performed this tapasya for my purification. Huh? One is ignorance and one is knowledge. An insincere devotee becomes proud, and a sincere devotee becomes grateful in the same situation. Huh? Just like Prahlad Maharaj, how Krishna tested him, and how he passed every test, but he never thought, just see how advanced I am, how I am willing to pass all these tests. Just see, I could have become the king of the world, but instead I underwent the worst persecutions in the history of humanity. God tested me, and I passed the test. He didn't think like that. He thought, my dear Lord, it is only by the mercy of my Guru Maharaj that I have attained the shelter of your lotus feet, and I have been able to remain faithful and loyal to you through all these difficulties of life. Therefore, thank you, Krishna. Thank you, Guru Maharaj. It is only by your mercy. That is how Prahlad was praying to Lord Narasimha. In the Bible, there's the story of Job. You know the story? Job was the most pious and religious man. It's a long story, I'm not quite very sure. And one day, some angels came to see God. This is what's described in the Old Testament. And along with them, Satan also came. The devil. Huh? And God was talking about what a nice devotee Job was. Now Job was a very wealthy man. He had thousands of cattle. He had thousands of sheep. He had 10 sons. All young, strong, handsome, and qualified. He had huge, huge acreage of land that belonged to him. He had beautiful homes for himself and all of his children. And he was so popular, he had so many friends. So Satan said, "What's so good about Job? You say he's so loyal to you, and he performs his rituals so faithfully to you, and he's always praising you. But you pay him well enough. Anyone could do it for what you give him. You've made him a multimillionaire with 10 children and 10,000 sheep and 7,000 camels and 6,000 goats and beautiful wife and thousands of acres of land." Take away all these things and let's see how loyal he is to you. Satan said, "God, let me take it away and then we'll see. Job will curse you. He will reject you." Huh? It's like in the material world, you work for someone as long as they pay you, but when they don't pay you, you leave them. So Satan said, "So this is Job, you pass so loyal, so have a loyal devotee, take it away. Let's see what a loyal devotee he is." You see, because Job was a devotee, Satan could do nothing to Job without God's permission. The fact is, if you're a devotee of the Lord, Maya has no power to do anything to you unless God sanctions it. And God will only sanction it if it's good for you. Huh? So sometimes we say, Maya's attacking. And sometimes devotees say, it's Krishna attacking. It's Krishna's mercy. And then we think, is it Krishna or is it Maya? If I'm a devotee, I'm supposed to be under Krishna's energy. Huh? So why does it seem like it's Maya? The fact is, it may be Maya, but Maya cannot touch you unless Krishna sanctions that she can. As soon as you become Krishna's devotee. Huh? So God gave Satan the sanction. Okay, you can take away all his wealth. So, all of a sudden, big fellows and thieves came, and all of his cattle and all of his land and all of his everything was destroyed. And people, materialistic people, came to Job and said, "Job, what is this? You're such a good devotee of God. Look what he's doing to you. What nonsense. Give up this useless God. Become like us. We're not suffering all these tribulations like him." Job said, No, God is good. Whatever he does is for the good. Praise the Lord. Let his name be chanted everywhere." So Satan came back to God. God said, "See, Job's a good man." Satan said, "Yeah, but he still has his family members. You know, love in this world, material family attachment is so strong. Let me take away his family." God said, "All right, go ahead." So his wife and all of his children, they were all in one of the brothers' house for some wedding ceremony.
And all of a sudden the wolf caved in and killed every single one of them instantly. And then the news came to Job that your wife and all her children are dead. You have no more house, you have no more land, you have absolutely nothing. And still, you're worshiping this crazy God? What for? What is the use? Curse this God. Reject him. What benefits are you going to have from being his devotee? Job said, hallowed be the name of God. Whatever he does is for the good. He is all good. So Satan went back to God. God said, see, Job is a good devotee. Satan said, yes, but he still has a good body. And you have this world as, the first consideration is number one. Right? As long as you're in good health and you're all right, then whatever else happens, you can tolerate. But let not inflict God's pain upon his body. And God sanctioned Satan that you can inflict as much pain as you want upon his body, but you cannot kill him. So Job, one day he woke up, and from the tips of his toes to the top of his head, he was inflicted with excruciatingly painful boils. Horrible big boils full of pus, itching and just aching. His whole body was so distorted. It was so inflamed and infected that when his friends came, they could not even recognize him. And Job was just laying on the ground crying. He could do nothing but cry. He was in mortal pain. Indescribable. Ah! So some very pious persons came. They said, Job. Job started saying, why am I suffering? I haven't done anything. Why am I such a good devotee? God has done so many things to me like this. I'm a just man. I'm a righteous man. I'm a pious man. Why am I suffering like this? And these men, one by one, started telling Job that God is all good. And Job was so proud of his piety and his religiousness and his devotion. Although he would not curse God, he would not deny God. He was so proud, he didn't think it was fair that he had to suffer like this because of his supreme devotion to the Lord. So then the Lord himself came down in the form of a man. Actually in the form of a voice, and totally chastised Job and made him realize that he was an ignorant fool, that he had no qualifications, he had no devotion, he was nonsense. And Job was so totally humiliated and defeated by all the words of God that that last speck of pride was removed from his heart. And then he surrendered to the Lord in that condition, understanding, my Lord, my pride was that last stumbling block. I was so proud of being a devotee. I was so proud of passing all your tests that pride became my worst enemy in life. But you so mercifully crushed that pride. Now I realize that it is only by your mercy that I am anything. I have no qualifications. My only qualification is your mercy, God. And then the Lord was very happy. He realized, now Job is pure. And he gave him a healthy body. He gave him all his children back. He gave him all his land back. He gave him all his sheep, all his camels, all his cattle. Gave him his house back, and he doubled everything. He tripled everything. So you see, it may appear that Satan wanted to test Job. But that's just the external. Internally, God. It was his will that Satan test him and put him through all these tribulations, because God knew there was still pride in his heart. Pride in his religious purity. And therefore God tortured him in this way, just specifically to remove that last trace, Maya. And then when that was removed, he gave him everything back. So we should never think that we are the doer. Yes?
So how to avoid all this torture and still remove the pride?
That is a very good question.
Ultimately,
you should be willing to accept whatever Krishna gives. But if you cultivate humility by becoming the servant of the servant of the servant, by learning to see the good faults in others and avoid seeing the defects in others, whenever you hear yourself boasting about your own qualities, you should become disgusted. Huh? Because when we praise our own qualities or our own accomplishments, people around may think, oh, very nice. But God in the heart is sick to his stomach. What kind of devotee is this? He's taking credit for everything I've done. Right? And the sincere devotees, when a person says bad things about himself, a sincere devotee thinks, ah, this person's very good. But when a person boasts about what he's done, a sincere devotee thinks, this poor devotee, piteous condition to see. He thinks he's good. So we have to cultivate this thought by training our mind to not take credit for what belongs to our spiritual master and God. Huh? And by becoming this Gopi Bharatur Padakamalayora Das Das Anudas, the servant of the servant of the servant, then Krishna does not have to do like this to us. Because of Sudama Vipra's great humility, Krishna gave him everything. Even though he did not even ask. Huh? We told the story about Indra. Because of his taking credit for what belonged to God, Krishna had to torture him by smashing his pride and humiliating him before everyone. Right? Now, he was simply inviting Krishna to do that to him by his pride. Therefore, the way to avoid that is to always be anxious to be the servant of the servant of the servant. And as soon as you say anything good about yourself, you should feel like you've just eaten stool. Huh? You should have that aftertaste. And it's whenever you say something to glorify another devotee, you should feel like you have just eaten. Huh? What do you like best? Good.
loved you.
That's very sweet. Yes.
Can you speak loudly? Because there are many firecrackers in the back.
Trinadapi sunichena thurorapi sahishnana amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari.
Krishna says you should offer all respects to others and not expect any respect for oneself. If their image is based on illusion, it has no value. Huh? Just like on a very gross level, if a criminal becomes pious, what does all his old friends who are criminals think of him? They think he's crazy. They think he's a coward. Right? They're saying, just see, he has no guts. He's not willing to be a criminal anymore. He just wants to be a straight, goody-goody boy in society. They laugh at you. They ridicule you. Huh? So does that mean you should become a criminal? When you see all your friends go to jail, then you are glad that you are a goody-goody, pious man in society. Right? So, materialistic people, what is day for them is night for the devotees, and what is night for the devotee, and what is day for the devotees is night for the ordinary man. Yanisha sarvabhutanam tasyam jagrati samyame. Huh? So we have to understand that this material world, everyone wants to be God, everyone wants to be the enjoyer. No one wants to be the humble servant. But you have to have the intelligence to know that they are on the path to bondage and death. Huh? So the question is, do you want to follow behind them? You know that story of those certain rodents called lemurs? One lemur at a certain time of the year, he starts running toward the ocean. And then everyone else thinks, ah, I'm going where he's going. He's running so fast, it must be a good place. Huh? And then these lemurs, they're all running, following this one. They don't know where they're going, but they think, well, there's so many other lemurs going that way, it must be a good place. So everyone's going. And then they all fall off the cliff and they all go into the ocean and they drown to death. Hmm? Understand that this is a society of lemurs, human lemurs. Human society, because everyone else is rushing to the ocean of breath, thinking, I am the enjoyer, I am the supreme. Everyone thinks it's normal. Samahatma Sadurlava, it is very, very rare. Manusyanam Sahasri Shukashti Jatati Siddhaye. It is very rare to find even one person who is willing to go against the grain of society and become a devotee of God, a real devotee. Huh? You think Prahlad was concerned with his image to his father? Because he was situated in a narrow chair. If I become a devotee, my father gets liberated.
if I do not become a divinity, if my image is pleasing in his eyes, then we both go to hell. Huh? So therefore, our consciousness has to be fixed on knowledge, not ignorance. This world is a place of ignorance. If you are allowed, you have to know that you are against the tide of this world. It is said you can please some of the people some of the time. You'll never please all the people all the time, no matter what you do. But if you please God, your life is perfect. You understand in this regard? Huh? Now, there was a man who came into town with his donkey and his son. Huh? This storm, although I've heard it before, I went to that again. Because if you're still concerned about your image, you have to hear it again. So, he was riding on the donkey, and his son was walking next to the donkey. And when they came to the village, people in the village started to criticize him. What kind of a cruel man is he? He's riding on the donkey, and his son has to walk. Selfish. So he's my God, my image. So the next time I came into town, his son was on the donkey, and he was walking. When I came, as he came in, he said, "What kind of a fool are you? Huh? Did you have a nice donkey? Huh? And your son, you allow your son to be so selfish and cruel to you that he lets you walk. What kind of father, what kind of trauma are you giving your son? That you're training him to be such a selfish fool." So you're thinking, my God, my image. So the next day he came into town, and he and his son both rode on the donkey. Then when they went into town, the townspeople started to say, "My God, how cruel, how consideration, this poor donkey, he's an old donkey, and so much weight you put on him. Both you and your son together. No consideration of life." I said, "My God, my image. What to do?" So the next day he came into town, and he and his son were both walking alongside the donkey, and there was nothing on the donkey. And the people in town said, "Here, what a fool, you have this nice donkey on the walking. What's the use of having such a nice donkey?" Then he realized, what's the use of this image? Whatever you do, there will be a class of men that condemn you. And whatever you do, there will be a class of men that praise you. Correct? So the question is, which class of men are in knowledge and which class of men are in ignorance? Those devotees who are taking knowledge from God and living according to His divine, sacred words, they are in knowledge. And when they see you surrendering your life in His service, they will praise and glorify you. But the materialistic people will think you are crazy. Huh? They will think you are a fool. They will think you are simply trying to escape from the reality of the world. Huh? But the devotees, they understand that you are actually facing the realities of the world and standing up against the forces of ignorance on behalf of God, and they will consider you a great hero. Huh? Who is crazy? The devotees think the materialists are crazy, the materialists think the devotees are crazy. If you are the body, then becoming a devotee is crazy. But if you are the soul, by becoming a materialist, is utterly insane. Huh? So don't consider how you can help people. Don't consider how you appear to them. If a child is sick, and the doctor wants to give him an injection, and the child says, I don't want that injection. If you come near me, I will hit you forever. What does the doctor do? You're a doctor. What do you do? Do you say, well, my image? Huh? No, you'll grab that child, and you'll just go, I hate you, hitting around, spinning around, scratching you and saying, I hate, right? But you think, very nice. Let him hate me. Tomorrow he will love me, right? Because I have saved him. So this is knowledge. If your parents, if you become pure, they become a body. If you do not become pure, they simply remain in the cycle of birth and death. So what is knowledge? The question is, how can you help them? How can you show love for them? Huh? Yes.
Whether we can reject the instruction of our guru as service to our guru.
Reject the instruction in the service in our humility. Huh? See, when Mahaprabhu asks a question, you have to go between the lines to figure out who he's talking about and what he's trying to.
He's a lawyer.
Huh? Lord Nityananda was once sitting under a tree with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Lord Chaitanya told him, next year, the Lord come to Jabalpur, stay by now and preach. And the next year, Lord Nityananda came to Jagannath Puri. And Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami praises, who can understand the infinite love of Lord Nityananda that he disobeyed Lord Chaitanya's instructions? Because Lord Nityananda was so purified and advanced that he knew the heart of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And therefore he knew by disobeying his instruction he would please the Lord more than if he obeyed. Now Srila Prabhupada, because you cannot understand a Shastra without the great souls' commentaries. So Srila Prabhupada makes sure we don't misunderstand this. He said, if you have no material attachments, if you have pure love of God, if you are on the level of Lord Nityananda, in the purity of your devotion, then you can disobey the order of God if you know his heart so well that this is what he really wants. But if you are not on that level, you must simply do what he says. Huh?
association with non-devotees automatically becomes distasteful. But then it is possible that the association with devotees itself becomes a crutch, and that the love and the adulation and the mutual respect and the dependency that becomes, that creates in within the society of devotees, that actually hinders our spiritual progress, because ultimately spiritual progress depends on our individual coming. We can only take the help but not get dependent.
If you are crippled and someone offers you a crutch, you should accept it. Yes, the association of a devotee is a crutch. But the fact is, we are all crippled and we cannot walk, we cannot continue forward on the march back to Godhead without a crutch. Huh? So that crutch is not something bad, it is something that is essential. The love, the respect, and the devotion of the association of devotees is absolutely necessary for our advancement in spiritual life. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us a satsanga tyaga a Vaishnav achar. That if you want to make spiritual advancement, two things are required. Do not associate with persons too much attached to sense enjoyment, and always associate with sadhus, devotees of the Lord. Huh? Actually, what Lord Chaitanya, the literal translation is very interesting. He says, do not associate with non-devotees or those attached to sense enjoyment. Now what does that mean? Think about that. What does it mean? He categorizes two, non-devotees or those too much attached to sense enjoyment. He already eliminates non-devotees. So what's left? Devotees. Not to even associate with devotees who are too much attached to sense enjoyment. But to associate with saintly persons. Of course, Lord Chaitanya also taught that for devotees who are too much attached to sense enjoyment, we do not associate with them, but we give them our guru's association. It's not that we should reject them, nor should we reject the avaishnavas, the non-devotees. To them, we don't take part in what gives them enjoyment. But we elevate them to a higher platform of spiritual life. But those advanced devotees will want to take part in what gives them enjoyment, the glorification of the Lord and the service of the Lord. And that association is absolutely essential. It is the most important ingredient for our spiritual advancement. Because it is through that association that we learn how to depend on Krishna. It is through that association that we internalize our consciousness. There has been many devotees in our movement who decided the association of devotees is so difficult. There's so many personality conflicts. There's so many differences in our false egos that I don't want to be in the association of devotees anymore. I want to go alone to Vrindavan. There it's peaceful, it's nice, nobody bothers me, I don't have to deal with anybody. Prabhupada over and over and over and over and over again condemned such persons. He says, if you go to Vrindavan like that, you have to bring your mind and senses with you.
Without the association of devotees, even in Vrindavan, it is very difficult to make any spiritual advancement. It is a great illusion. It is false pride. But you see, if you're really associating with genuine devotees, they are constantly preaching to you about surrender. Huh? They're not preaching to you about complacency. They will not allow you to become complacent. Their association will keep pushing you forward. Huh? That is what Lord Chaitanya said. You should seek out the association of those persons who help to impress upon you that march forward through the process of surrender. Huh? Devotee doesn't simply mean someone who has tilak and dhoti. A sadhu is someone who is giving up sense gratification and who is constantly teaching us to push forward in a life of surrender. Huh? You will not feel complacent when you're in the association of a serious devotee. Huh? You will feel peaceful and rightly situated, but you will not feel complacent. You will feel ashamed. How much more I can be doing? Huh? How much he is doing, or she is doing, and how little I am doing. That's how you should feel. And in that association, you can only go forward if you are sincere, if you take advantage. That friendship is good, but you should maintain such nice friendships if they are nice devotees. But besides that friendship with nice devotees who are on your level, you have to seek out the association of those devotees who are pushing you forward. Huh? You should be kind to every devotee. You should befriend every devotee. But you should take shelter of those devotees who can push you forward on the path. Huh?
Two questions. First one is that it's often said that familiarity breeds contempt. Now, sometimes, like, association of devotees is very sweet. If it's too sweet, like more sweet. You had enough of the sweet. Have you experienced, like, what do you do to solve this problem? He's not at fault.
Material familiarity will bring contempt. But spiritual familiarity breeds Krishna consciousness. Spiritual familiarity will never breed contempt. As long as the service of the spiritual master and the glorification of Krishna is in the center of our familiarity with another, it will never bring contempt. it will only breed advancement in Krishna consciousness. But as soon as we put something material, as soon as we put sense growth,
this question is somewhat complicated. You see, according to Shastra, if one offends a great devotee, he is blocked from getting the complete mercy of Krishna until he begs forgiveness from that particular devotee. The most illustrative story in that regard is Durvas Muni and his offense to Ambarish Maharaj. Even when he surrendered to Krishna, Vishnu himself, Vishnu said, I have no power to forgive you until you get the mercy of Ambarish Maharaj. He is my devotee. And similarly, there is the story of Gopal Chakravarti, or Gopal Chapala. Gopal Chapala committed a very grievous offense to Srivas Thakur. And within days, he came down with horrible leprosy. And he suffered this leprosy for years. And he begged Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he surrendered to the feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, please forgive me, I'm a nonsense. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, if Srivas Thakur forgives you, then I automatically forgive you. If he does not forgive you, there's nothing I can do or will do. Now, Srivas Thakur never held anything against him. Yeah. He would forgive him immediately. He already forgave him. But Gopal Chakravarti, or Gopal Chapala, had to go through the sincere motions, internally and externally, of expressing his mistake and begging forgiveness. And as soon as he did that, Mahaprabhu gave him his complete blessings. So you see, if you offend a devotee, you must apologize.
The reason I asked this question is about this image that my friend had asked. There was a concern of the worldly image. There was a question asked over there about the image. Some of these people were more concerned about their image during that few years. Hence they got just criticized. They were worried about their image. So they left that part.
But at the same time, Krishna knows the hearts. If you don't know, then you should let somebody who is in a superior position than you judge. Huh? That means you inquire submissively from an advanced devotee who has that power to discriminate and judge. That is the safest way. The formula is, if that person's association is increasing our service to our guru, it's good. But if it's causing a decrease to the service of our guru, it's material. It's sense gratification. Huh? What is the influence?
What is the result? One time, at the very beginning of the movement in New York City, it was Krishna consciousness was such a utopian ideal that everyone was just dreaming of all their life, and Prabhupada has come to give it, that the devotees were so happy to be in the association of Prabhupada and the devotees that it was unimaginable how anyone could ever leave the Krishna consciousness movement. And then one day, someone left. His name was Sri Adish. And everyone was shocked. They couldn't believe it. How could anyone leave Krishna's mercy? How could anyone leave Prabhupada? How could anyone leave the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? They couldn't believe it. And they approached Prabhupada in this shock and dismay. And you know what Prabhupada said? He smiled. At the same time, he was very sad at the loss of this devotee. But he smiled and he said, "Do not be surprised at who leaves this movement, but be surprised at who stays." Because to stay in this movement means you have to be very serious. Because the whole material energy is trying to take you out of it. But then he said, it's sad that this person is causing a break in his spiritual advancement. But it's glorious. For the time he was here, he utilized properly his human life, and he progressed on the path back to Godhead. And that progress will never stop. It will never be taken away. It will continue. Once tasting the lotus feet of Krishna, you can never be satisfied for long with material life again. Yatvasva dharamam charanam bhajam harer bhajan apakvotavate patuyati. Bhagavatam says that once one takes to Krishna consciousness and tastes the sweetness of service to Krishna, even if he falls down again into material life, he cannot stay there. He's already experienced something too high. He will eventually become so frustrated he will come running back to Krishna. So Prabhupada said, he will be back. 100% guarantee, he will be back, either in this life or the next. He can no longer ever be content with material life again. So it's fortunate that he had the opportunity to make as much advancement as he did. But it's unfortunate that he's wasting his time taking this break. Huh? You should know that that inferior complex is only due to your false ego. Now you have to tolerate your false ego and become the humble servant of those persons you are envious of. That is the process of overcoming that envy. And you should pray earnestly in your heart for God to remove that envy. And you should continue to chant the holy names and execute the order or the process of Krishna consciousness, and gradually that envy will dissipate. So why feel inferior? You should feel inferior. It is good to feel inferior. But in that inferior condition, you should understand how fortunate you are in your lowly position that you have the opportunity. Correct? Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami considered himself lower than the worm and stool. But he wasn't lamenting over that. He was encouraged that Lord Chaitanya's mercy and his devotees' mercy is so wonderful that it even comes down to a worm and stool like me. Huh? So in this way, you should feel yourself inferior. But the complex should not discourage you, it should encourage you. Because the mercy is coming upon you. That in and of itself, the opportunity is coming upon you. One out of millions of billions of people in this world, you have the opportunity to become Krishna conscious. You have the association of devotees. You have been willing to accept it. How blessed and fortunate you are, even in your lowly condition. You should feel very grateful and very encouraged. Yes. But you see, Shyam, I quoted a verse by Lord Chaitanya. He did not say you should not meet non-devotees. It is your duty to meet non-devotees. It is every devotee in Lord Chaitanya's movement, it is his duty. He must meet non-devotees. But he doesn't associate with them. He gives their association to them. Associating with someone means you share their pleasures and their ways with them. Huh? Associating with a drunkard means you become a drunkard with them. Right? But if you go to that person to help him solve his drinking problem, you're not associating with him. You're giving your association to him. Right? So therefore, the devotees that met with you, they did not associate with you in the sense that they did not start taking pleasure and enjoyment in the materialistic ways that you were living. Right? If they did, they could not have helped you. But rather, they came to you to give Krishna's association and to uplift you. In other words, we should become a friend to all living beings, not an enemy. Someone who perpetuates your illusion, the name of friendship, is actually your enemy. Right? But someone who is willing to come to where you are in your consciousness and do whatever is necessary to uplift you, to enlighten you, to gradually bring you to the lotus feet of Krishna. He is your friend. He loves you. Huh? Sometimes devotees, year after year after year, they patiently meet with materialistic people.
the same materialistic person to somehow or other gradually bring him little by little by little closer to Krishna. Huh? That person is your best friend. That person loves your soul. Now, how to repay such a person? What Prabhupada had to experience in his mission? Do you know who he had to meet with on the Lower East Side of New York, in the Bowery? There was absolutely not a single living creature that wasn't not addicted to illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating. Huh? And he was living amongst such persons constantly. But he never shared their pleasures. He was constantly giving them prasad, giving them the holy name, preaching to them, patiently waiting for them to come to Krishna's lotus feet. Huh? And therefore he saved their lives from spiritual death. And the devotees were so grateful, Prabhupada, what you have done, what you tolerated, what sufferings you underwent just to give me Krishna consciousness. You are the first person I understand who's really ever loved me and been my friend. All my other so-called friends were simply perpetuating my illusion and my sinful karma. What can we do to repay you? Prabhupada said, there's only one thing you can do to repay me. What I have given you, you must give to others. Huh? The sacrifice that I have undergone to give you Krishna consciousness, you should be willing to take that same sacrifice to give others Krishna consciousness. According to your profession, according to your means, according to your capacity, we should all be trying to share the fortune that our guru has given us and that Krishna has given us. Huh? That means you must meet with people, but don't come to their level. Bring them to Krishna's level.
Srila Prabhupada also said that he compared this world as a battlefield. He said, don't waste your time for those who are more injured.
It means you have to utilize the time allotted in your life in a way that will most efficiently serve the mission of the Lord. He wants to save every wounded soldier on the battlefield. That is his desire. But he knows that he only has limited time and limited capacity. Therefore, if one person is in a 98% hopeless condition, and the other person is in a 30% hopeless condition, and he can only save one, he only has the time, he'll first go to the person who it's most likely that he could save. And then if he has time, he'll go to the other person. That's common sense. So if someone is receptive to hear about Krishna, and someone doesn't want to hear anything, you should try to give them both Krishna consciousness. But you should spend the majority of your energy where it will be appreciated, where it will be utilized. Sometimes it is said, don't throw your pearls to the swine. It's also the ninth offense to the holy name to preach to the faithless. If someone simply doesn't want to hear, then there's no value in preaching. Give him prasad. It takes 5 seconds to give him prasad. And then you can go find someone who wants to hear. And you've done everything you can for that person. Right? Or as you walk by, say, Hare Krishna! Eat this ladu. That's all the person will accept from you. That's all you could do for that person, but you've done more for that person than anyone else has ever done for him.
and then go find someone who's willing to listen to the philosophy. Huh? He convinced against his will is of his own opinion still. You preach to those who are receptive and who want to hear. You don't preach to people who don't want to hear. You give them prasad. You let them hear the holy name. You try to get some donations from them. But then you think, you've done something very wonderful by the mercy of my guru. Huh? We have to use our God-given intelligence. If we see Prabhupada, when he came to America, everyone was 99% dead. If he saw the tiniest little spark of interest, he would think, this is glorious. This person is a great saint amongst all these other people. It's rare to find anyone with even that spark. One out of millions even has a spark. And Prabhupada would just very gently just fan that spark. He knew if he fanned it too hard, it would go out. He would just as gentle. Little by little, he'd see it getting bigger, then he'd fan a little harder, then a little bigger, and they'd go a little harder, then a little bigger. Pretty soon, after he gave them initiation, the day after, he told them, oh, by the way, there's four regulative principles. You've already made the vow, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meeting. And most of them, what? I would have never done it. Prabhupada said, no, it's Krishna will help you. So if you see a spark in someone and you see that that person can really potentially help our movement and reach, and by that one person, millions of others through him can be touched with the message of God, then that is proper use of our God-given intelligence. We have to be very sensitive to fan it. If we fan too hard, that little spark is extinguished. And if we don't fan, if we do not fan enough, the spark just remains the way it is. So we have to learn by watching those great preachers how to properly preach. Huh? Just like one time, there was a very materialistic woman. I have told this story many times. Very materialistic woman. She used to come to the temple with all sorts of Italian fashionable clothes and a very, very fancy hairstyle. She would go to beauty parlors and spend her hard-earned money making very nice formations in her hair. Huh? And she'd come to the temple. She was a little serious, a little tiny bit serious. She thought it was interesting, these devotees jumping around in the streets. There must be something to these people. So she came to the temple. And the devotees, first they started preaching to her, but then they saw, you know, her hair and her clothes. She's in Maya. Not only is she in Maya, but she is Maya. So they were telling her that your hair is Maya and your clothes are Maya. And she was a proud person. she was thinking, forget these devotees. They're insulting me every time I come to the temple. I'm never going to come to this temple again. So she made a vow she was never going to come to the temple again. But then she saw an advertisement in the paper that Srila Prabhupada was visiting the temple. So she was thinking, well, I don't want to see those devotees anymore. All they do is insult me. But I'm very curious about this guru, so I'll go to visit him. So she went in the room. There was a little spark, and Prabhupada saw that spark. He was expert. His eyes just looked at her, and he saw a little tiny spark like this in her heart of interest for Krishna. And Prabhupada went like this. And when she walked in the room, he said to her, "Oh, you are very beautiful, and you have such beautiful hair." And the devotees were thinking, "God, Prabhupada." But her heart melted. Her heart completely melted. And that little spark went like this. And she was speechless. She couldn't even say hardly anything except, "Prabhupada, thank you very much." Prabhupada said, "Chant Hare Krishna." And the next day, she came to see Prabhupada with her hair combed down, braided, and wearing a sari. And she surrendered. Huh? So preaching doesn't mean being self-righteous. Preaching means compassionately giving that person whatever he needs or she needs to advance. Huh? Sometimes people are very self-righteous. They have the hammer of the philosophy and they want to bang everyone to death that isn't a surrendered soul. Huh? Like, they're like in the mood of Parasaram. But a preacher is not a preacher. He has the hammer. When the time is right, he'll bang your ego to death. Huh? But until the time is right, like a goldsmith, he'll just tinkle, 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 just to bring it to the point where then he could smash. So preaching, the most important qualification of a preacher is not being philosophical. That is an aid. Having good philosophical knowledge of Shastra and logic is very important, but that is not the real qualification of a preacher. The real qualification of a preacher is he's compassionate. He's genuinely concerned with a person's spiritual development, and he'll do anything and say anything to help that person advance in Krishna consciousness. When I first met Prabhupada, it was in Bombay at Cross Maidan. And the first night of his lecture, by his great mercy, I was sitting just where Vaishnav was in relationship. So I could hear every word very clearly. And he was giving his lecture, and he was talking about what is a good preacher. And there was this little tiny girl, she was 4 years old, Saraswati. And he said, "She's a first class preacher." He said, "She only knows one philosophical term, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She doesn't know anything else, but she knows Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And everyone she meets, she grabs him by the hand." She's this little tiny girl. She grabs him by the hand and shakes it.
And they look down, and especially in India, they see she had blonde hair, blue eyes, white skin. It's a very pretty little girl, 4 years old. And they'd look and they'd smile. Ah, how nice. And she'd say, guess what? And they'd say, what? She'd say, Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They would agree with her. Yes, yes, of course Krishna is the Supreme Personality. Prabhupada said, whatever little or great you know, if you say it with compassion, you are a first-class preacher. But whatever little and great you know, if you are not compassionate and concerned with a person's spiritual life, then you are not going to be such an effective preacher. Prabhupada's qualification was his compassion. Prabhupada would frankly tell us there are many people in India who are better philosophers than me. Prabhupada spoke very simple. He was deeply philosophical. But his he was deeply philosophical, but there are so many pundits and acharyas in India who are deeply philosophical. The one thing Prabhupada had was his compassion. It was unparalleled. He was willing to sacrifice his life. He was willing to do anything to help a person become Krishna conscious. Huh? The disciple must obey the guru, but the disciple should also submissively reveal his mind. In other words, Arjuna revealed his mind to Krishna, and that was perfectly appropriate. But his glory was, ultimately he was ready to do what Krishna wanted. So therefore, it is actually a service to the spiritual master to reveal your mind submissively. Because it helps him help you. Huh? But ultimately, after revealing your mind, you should be willing to do what he says. So we should learn to submissively reveal our mind. If he doesn't want us to reveal our mind, then there's no need. But if he welcomes it, then it is our service to him to be honest. Now, if you do not reveal your mind and you just obey, that is still good. It's better to be honest and get all clarifications, like Arjuna did. But if you just obey blindly, that's still good. It means you want to surrender. Now, if you try, you have succeeded. It's not a question of success or failure, whether externally it works out the way it should, in your eyes. Just like Krishna told Arjuna, first Arjuna revealed his mind. He said, I don't want to fight Krishna. This is where I'm at. Krishna listened. And then Arjuna said, but Krishna, I'm going to do whatever you want. And then Krishna told him, you fight, but don't be attached to victory or defeat. Even if you lose the battle, you win. You've pleased me because you've surrendered. Huh? If you do what I want you to do, even if you get massacred on a battlefield, you go back to Godhead.
And if you win, then you get all the glory of the earth. So success and failure is not based on the result of our endeavors. The success or failure is based on the spirit of our trying to be faithful to the order of Guru. If you are sincerely endeavoring to try to be faithful to your Guru's order, but beyond your control, you're not able to externally fulfill that order, you are perfect. It is the spirit of surrender that the Guru wants. Sometimes it's Krishna's arrangement that you cannot fulfill the order of your Guru externally. You should accept that that is Krishna's purification upon me. Krishna knows past, present, and future. He knew at the very beginning you wouldn't be able to do it. That is sometimes the instance. But the fact that you tried, you get all spiritual credit. And the purification you go through failing will make you a very humble, saintly person if you accept it in the proper spirit of devotion. So it's not the result, it's the spirit of the surrender that makes you a success or failure. But we have to try for the result according to our capacity. We have to try. We can't give up. Until the Guru tells us to give up, we cannot give up. But we can't be attached either. We're only attached to the service, not the result. Right? Any other questions?
What is the symptom of spiritual advancement and what is the result of it?
The symptom of spiritual advancement is when you accept the will of God as your life and soul. And the result of it is pure love of God. The symptom of spiritual advancement on a higher level is when the taste for the glorification of Krishna increases and the taste for hearing and chanting any other subject matter decreases. The symptom of spiritual advancement is the taste for the glorification of God and His devotees becomes our greatest pleasure, and the taste for idle gossip and fault-finding becomes abominable. So we should strive to become advanced like that. Another symptom of spiritual advancement is we really want to help others, rather than wanting everyone to help us. The most famous words of John Kennedy was, "Ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country." This is a spiritual principle. It is said you can take gold even from a filthy place. You can take knowledge even from a fool. So actually, this is the spirit we should all be in. We have a temple, Radha Gopinath Mandir. Some people criticize, oh, so much dirt, so much fault, so much argument, so much lack of this and lack of that. I don't want to go there. This is not Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is, if I see some difficulty, the question is, how can I help? What can I do to make it better? Huh? Ask not what the temple can do for you, ask what you can do for the temple. That is a higher principle. And we should try to absorb within our hearts that spirit. Huh? Because in Krishna consciousness, the more you take, the less you have. And the more you give, the greater is your wealth. Hmm? It's easy to criticize, it's easy to find faults. Anybody could do that. You don't have to be sincere to do that. But you have to be very sincere to see whatever opportunity there is for you to solve the problem. You know the story of the sparrow and the ocean? The sparrow's eggs were taken by the ocean, and the sparrow made a vow, I'm going to dry every drop of water from you, ocean, if you don't give me my eggs. And the sparrow started taking little droplets and taking it to a distant place and dropping the drop and then going back to the ocean. And the ocean laughed, stupid sparrow. But then, because of the sparrow's earnest, sincere desire, he attracted the higher power of Garuda. And Garuda came down and said, Ocean, if you don't give those eggs, I will dry you up. And the ocean knew that Garuda could dry her up within minutes, and she immediately gave the eggs. So we may see some problems, and we may think, oh, I don't want to associate. Why should I? What am I getting out of it? I'm not enlivened. Forget about your enlivenment. How can you enliven others? Not how can others enliven me. If others enliven you, that's wonderful. But more important is how can you enliven others? And if you think, well, I'm so insignificant, I'm just a woman, what can I do? Nobody listens to me. Right? Huh? we should take the example of the sparrow. If you earnestly and sincerely try to help, to give of yourself, then God will empower you. The higher power of God will empower you to do wonderful things in this world. When the devotees are unified in a common spirit, to glorify Krishna and serve their guru and fulfill his desires, then there is no power on earth that could impede the progress of this movement. Huh? But when Maya creates disunity, and unity means every individual must take it as his life's responsibility to be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. There is a million reasons to not want to associate. There are a million reasons why, a million faults you can find. But all that's necessary is one reason to associate, to serve Guru, to fulfill the desires of Krishna. Huh? And this is the great sacrifice. There are so many personality conflicts. There are so many people we just don't like. There are so many things we don't like. There are so many people who don't care about me. Huh? But the question is not how many people care about me.
If they care about me, that's wonderful. That's something I'll accept. It's wonderful. If somebody cares about you, you must accept it. If they care about you spiritually, accept it. Benefit from it. But that's not the question you should ask. The question is, how much do I care about them? Saint Francis said, seek not to take, but seek to give. Seek not to be consoled as to console. Huh? We have to give up our selfishness. The tendency is to feel sorry for ourselves. But we should learn to feel sorry for others. Huh? Why don't we feel sorry for others and try to help them rather than feel sorry for us and just expect everyone to help us? That is the difference between a sincere devotee and an insincere devotee. Now, every one of us has the capacity to be sincere if we simply hear from proper sources and accept and follow. That's all. Huh? It takes any fool on the street to find faults in others. And any fool in the street can talk about his own glories. But it takes a great man to see whatever little good quality is in another and not worry about whatever faults may be there. And it takes a very great man.